Live from Burbank, California, where people are too stupid to buy a smart car, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he just put spinners on his skateboard. Mark Maron.
Ah, don't they? Look at, they're spinning too. Huh? Chris Rock, that was the funniest joke on that last special. They're spinning. Look at them spinning. Hey, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines, pain sponges, blogsters, blog people, the blog folks.
Blog aerials?
Yeah, the blog aerials. I don't know what the proper name is. I don't know, man. How you doing, Jim? Everything all right?
Yeah, I'm just drained.
Okay.
All right. But I'm fine.
Good way to open. Yeah, I can always rely on you for the power punch at the beginning.
Okay.
How's it going?
Ask me again.
How's it going, Jim?
Whoa! Dog it!
Yeah, there you go.
Woo!
There you go. Fake it. Fake it, man. I am going to I'll tell you about the show in just a second. Yeah, maybe I'll do it now. Let's get the business out of the way at the beginning. Why don't we start doing the show properly?
Yeah, that's
in our last few days. On the show tonight, Doug Benson from the Marijuana Logs and from Last Comic Standing. Apparently, he needs our help. Apparently, there's a loophole. Something's going to happen. I don't know what, but he was kicked off, I think, Last Comic Standing. I can't watch it. But apparently, he lost, and now he's coming back. Maybe he'll give us some information as to why he's doing the show and what is happening, how we can help Doug Benson.
Good publicity. That's my only
Well,
guess,
what
huh?
You mean in terms of doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll get you about a half a year run. I think that those people that were on it the first time that came in second or third or whatever were able to milk something out of it for a little while, like Rich Voss and a couple of those other people.
Rich Voss.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of momentum they really were able to keep on it. You know, I don't know, but I think it does give you a little boost. Greg Graffin from Bad Religion, the lead singer, is going to be on. He's just released a solo CD that's actually folky, like folk rock, like completely a departure from the guy who was a seminal part of the L.A. punk scene in the 80s. Tim Grieve, our buddy over at Salon.com, the War Room column, is going to be with us for a little news crunch. And next weekend, folks, if you don't realize or you don't know or you live out of town or you want to drive down, this is the thing to do, Democracy Fest, the third annual Democracy Fest. That's next Friday and Saturday, the weekend of the 14th and 15th. It's going to be down on the San Diego State University campus, and it's going to be pretty amazing. I mean, Franken's going to be doing his show live there on Friday. We're going to go live Friday night. They're going to have a big barbecue and band and concert and show and seminars. David Sirota's going to be on there, Bob Waldman. I'm going to be there. Franken's going to be there. Howard Dean's going to be there. Maxine Waters is going to be there. There's going to be a big show. There's going to be dancing. There's going to be barbecue. Two fun days trying to figure out how the hell to make it work, to make the country work. And that's what it takes, really. It takes a lot of beer, a surf guitarist, and a show to really get to the nuts and bolts of how democracy works. But it's going to be a good time, and I would come down there if I were you. I am going to be down there, and I'm me. They already mentioned Tim Grieve's going to be on. All right, well,
yes.
Enough of that. I'll tell you one thing, Jim. I don't usually miss New York, but I was kind of this scared me. It gave me the creeps because this is a big fear of mine. When I read about this this terror cell, or it's not really a terror cell. It's not clear how ambitious these guys were. It's interesting that this is the second one of these in about a month's time that has surfaced, where the Department of Homeland Security has assisted in breaking up a plan to bomb the PATH train tunnels by a group of guys that are on international. There's two of them in Lebanon. There's one of them in Lebanon. There's two overseas. There's probably about six players in this thing, and they picked up indication on some sort of terrorist chat board that these guys were plotting to blow up the tunnels between New York and New Jersey that the PATH trains go through. Now, that is something they've been talking about for a long time, but then you get down to the bottom of this story, and a U.S. official said the plot was, quote, largely aspirational, end quote, and described the internet conversations as mostly extremists discussing and conceptualizing the plot. So on some level, this is their form of dirty talk. This is how these guys communicate, the aspiring jihadists or people with big dreams of destroying our country. This is how they communicate it with. They said there were some code words and this or that, but this is a slippery slope in some respects to, you know, when is something really a plot and when is something just idle chatter, and what can and can't you say in terms of your freedom of speech in this country. Granted, this was a a jihadist chat board, perhaps, and some of these guys were international, which I think makes the difference. But it's one of those things. Can I say I think somebody should blow up the White House?
I think they should. Can you say it?
I think they should do it tomorrow. I think it wouldn't be bad if somebody, you know, just blew it all up. Destroyed Washington, D.C.
But you're not saying that, really.
I think I am. I believe that somebody, why not? Somebody.
But no, Mark, you're not really saying that.
I'm not saying I'm going to blow up the White House.
No, but you're not saying that somebody should either, are you, Mark?
No, not really, but I should have the freedom to say that. Let's say in anger.
Yes.
You know, it's like, man, I am so pissed off at Bush. I wish somebody would just take him out. Just take him out. I mean, that would make a big difference. You know, take Cheney out, too. And then I'm like, then all of a sudden I get a call from the National Security or for Department of Homeland Security. You're under arrest. For what? For insinuating or planning.
Advocating
and perhaps planning. Let's say you and I talk about it. Let's say here's a conversation. Wouldn't it be great if somebody just took Bush out and you said, yeah, say
Mark,
yeah.
I just don't think we should speak like that in public.
No, just say yes. Yes. Just say yes, someone should do it. Go ahead, say it. Come on.
Okay, I won't, but my friend Jackie will.
Is Jackie here?
Yes, he is.
Hey, Jackie, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine.
Do you think we should take out the president?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so there you go. So then theoretically, Jackie and I were plotting, weren't we?
Oh, gee. Get out of here, Jackie.
Yeah, run, buddy.
Yeah, see, I don't. You know, I think you can get arrested or fined for that. Can't
no,
you? If
no.
you? If you're plotting, if you advocate like an assassination on a public official.
Can you?
Isn't that stepping over the lines?
Well, maybe I meant take out to dinner. See? It's a language issue. I was really angry.
And
I
Coulter can do it.
I thought that maybe somebody should take Cheney and Bush out to dinner and give them a stern talking to. See, it's a language thing. You never know. But granted, we will see what unfolds with this particular group of potential terrorists.
They were just
terrorists.
Aspiring. Homeland Security is a dream killer.
Department of Homeland Security is a bloated money hole, is what it is. And the truth of the matter is, if anything ever happens around terrorism, it's usually because of fairly decent police work. My question is, why all of a sudden, in 1 month, are there two busts that are taking predominant focus on in the media that are clearly aspirational, not operational at all, but getting the press? Like, it's just the idea that the Sears Tower was on the front, on the homepage of AOL. They were talking about blowing up the Sears Tower. So they put the Sears Tower there, and then in some people's minds, there you go. Now, I live in New York. I lived there, you know, and I had that fear all the time, post 9/11, and getting on that train in Queens and going under that river, because it seemed like a no-brainer, dude. And New York, despite what anyone thinks, there's a certain amount of faith people place in the idea that most people are not going to blow things up here, because it would be almost impossible to secure New York without amazing police work. So you just have to assume that not necessarily the Department of Homeland Security, but good police work, like in this happened in Miami, despite the fact that those guys might have been clowns, it was really about police work. It wasn't about the Department of Homeland Security. In this particular situation, they're claiming that they had intelligence cooperation in 5 or 6 countries, which could just be phone calls. I'm saying that this is campaigning. This is building the frame as we move towards the elections that the war on terror is still the primary issue that must be focused on as we enter these midterms, and I think this has something to do with it.
In the meantime, let's hope that, you know, another 50 Timothy McVeighs don't get motivated. You know,
what about our
homespun terrorists, like a few hundred in Iowa and Idaho and Texas and parts of the South? You know, we got more to worry about from our own citizens than we do anybody else.
Yeah, what happened to those guys? I guess they're feeling fairly well represented with this administration, and they're not as violent as they used to be.
Yeah.
The KKK, the Klan, many of them are in office. And with all these pages from Patrick Henry, from the Patrick Henry School, and the religious right sort of infiltrating government, maybe those guys are a little more placated these days with this particular president who doesn't support him. They're down there on the border.
This is a placating terrorist president. You know, he's friends with Saudi Arabia. And
with the religious right, with
that's
the
right.
Whack jobs. And I've heard that some of those Minutemen down the border are affiliated with the KKK, which would make, you know, complete sense to me.
They carry a Confederate flag.
Well, that's part of it. But I heard that literally some of them are. Hey, I wanted to bring up this. We got to talk to Tim Grieve in a second. But let's talk, you know, Aaron Watata was charged by the Army for, you know, with missing movement, contempt towards officials, and conduct on becoming an officer. As you know, we talked to him. He was the guy that refused, the officer who refused to go if he were sent to Iraq on the grounds that it was an illegal war. Well, now he's been charged, and he may face a hearing, not a court-martial. But this is the first step in political action, that this was something he expected to happen. And the best thing that can happen, from his point of view, is that he is able to air his case in a court to make the case that this was an illegal war in accordance with the Geneva Conventions and some other treaties that we are signed on to. The Hague, the Nuremberg. Oh man,
Nuremberg laws.
Yeah, that on several levels, United Nations Charter as well. That this is an illegal war, and it is his duty as an officer to bring that to the attention of the military. So this is phase one. I hope people are still on board with the story. We will be talking to Tim Grieve momentarily, and I meant take out to dinner. Really, don't I?
I understand.
I mean, I don't want to get in this kind of trouble. I mean, I've got a week left of this show. I don't want to go to jail.
The last time he passed out, he woke up with a Jamaican accent. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Tim Grieve has been on vacation. Hasn't been on our show in a few weeks either. But when he's not on vacation, man, he stays on top of the news, but he also stays on top of his column. Literally posts sometimes three or four times a day, I think. He's compulsive about it, and that's what's great about the Internet is if you need to get something out there now, you can. It's out. It's now. I beat it. I beat everybody else. I got it out. Tim's column is The War Room on Salon.com. He's back with us now to crunch some news. Welcome back to the show, Tim Grieve.
Hey, glad to be back. And three or four times a day would be when I'm sleeping, man.
Yeah? Yeah? Do you mean, yeah, don't, but so how many, what's the most you've posted in any given day?
Oh, I think in the height of, I don't know, Katrina or Terry Schiavo or Scooter Libby or something, I might post 12 or 15 times a day.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a long day.
Yeah, I know, it must be. So this is very exciting to me. Do you think we're getting some traction on Ann Coulter being, not only is she something that rhymes with the word punt, but she's clearly a dirty thief of words. And do you think there's some traction in this? Do you think it's going to stick at all?
Well, I think there's some traction in it. You know, the sort of drumbeat I keep hearing from others on the left is, you know, we've got to stick the right with Ann Coulter. We've got to make her stick to the Republican politicians who are aligned with her, and you know, they don't seem bothered by all the heinous things she says, but they do have a track record of being bothered by plagiarists. I mean, look what they did to poor Joe Biden, you know, maybe this sticks this time around. Her publisher sure seems to be coming to her defense, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And Joe Biden was he's a Democrat, and they I guess plagiarism seems to be a weird slippery slope these days for some reason. It's almost like in the age of information, there are plagiarist apologists. But in terms of Coulter, it's clear that there were several accounts of things she just lifted from news stories. And that, you know, what's weird to me is how a publisher can just, no one's denying it, but how a publisher can just say, look, it's not long enough, or it doesn't appeal, it's not about plagiarism, but these aren't footnoted things. Clearly, she just took what she wanted, right?
Yeah, that's right. And the defense from the guy at Random House is, well, you know, there weren't really enough plagiarized words in here to count. And I want to know, well, how many does it take? You know,
right.
Is it five?
Right.
Is it 10? Is it 200? And I would venture to say that if tomorrow I came out with a new book that had 25 or 30 words here and there from some Random House book, Random House's lawyers would not be particularly happy with me.
Right, right. No, absolutely not. Well, I just think that I assume, I don't know what your take is on this, that really the right, as much as they indulge Ann Coulter, is that, you know, she's really just an evil clown that they act like they have no control over, but she is a talking points distributor and also defines some of the frames that they use in the media that become the right's frames. Now, I guess what I'm saying is, wouldn't the right just kind of hang her out to dry if it really got thick?
Well, I think they would, but I mean, when is the last time they hung anybody out to dry, you know?
I guess so.
Rush Limbaugh gets himself arrested and God knows what else, and disappears on his mystery trip and shows up with Viagra in his bag, and he's still invited over for, you know, multi-hour chat with Karl Rove at the White House.
So. Yeah, this is the great hypocrisy of the leaders of the religious right in that in how they're sort of, they become complicit when they're members of their own side. Is that Ann Coulter claims to be some sort of Christian, and Rush Limbaugh claims to be righteous, but it's clearly so apparent that they're not, yet none of the religious people seem to take them to task.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I don't know if you've talked about this on your show or not, but you know, there's that charity auction the other day where Tom DeLay was off auctioning off a beaver pelt, and he who you know, shows up at these religious events all the time and pretends to be the world's most pious exterminator was certainly having a good time making jokes about beaver.
Yeah, they seem to forgive certain things when it comes to that stuff, and I don't quite understand the logic of it. But
yeah, there's nothing wrong with these kind of jokes, I guess, but don't turn around and portray yourself as a holier-than-thou, you know, moralistic person who can enforce your religious code on the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems to me that the religious right people don't hold those people to the same standards because they assume that they're all on the same team, and I guess they make exceptions if you're willing to cut up the Constitution or work for the effort towards theocracy to let you off the hook.
Right, as long as you're willing to outlaw abortion.
Yeah, everything's cool.
Anything else really matters.
Anything goes. That's right. So let's talk about North Korea for a minute. What do they want? Trouble?
Yeah, what's up with these people? Anyway, you know, it's just bizarre. The reports out today suggest that, you know, the administration's first take on, or the first line they put out about this missile wasn't exactly true. You know, they said, oh, it's just, you know, fell into the ocean right away. It was a dud. It was just up for a minute. Well, it turns out it was up for 7 minutes.
Uh-huh.
First they said, you know, well, we don't know where it was going. Well, now it turns out it was aimed at Hawaii. Hello.
Was it truly aimed at Hawaii? I heard news reports. I read some stuff, and that is really what you think is that.
At least that's last thing I read. A Japanese newspaper reported today that a senior intelligence official for South Korea said that they had determined that it was headed for the waters off of Hawaii, and that maybe that was meant to send a message to the United States. Or maybe it's just because if they aimed at Alaska or something, they might have hit some Korean land if it went haywire before it got that far.
But Tim, let's talk about that. The waters off of Hawaii, that seems like thousands of miles of water and radius.
Well, sure, there's a lot of water. So who knows just how specific that is.
But, yeah. And I guess my question is, and that came from Japanese intelligence. That's interesting because the Japanese prime minister was just here visiting Graceland. And also it seems that there's a reuniting of the relationship between Japan and the United States, and that Japan's leading the effort to put sanctions on North Korea. Let's talk about it a little more in a second. Will you hang out?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Tim. I feel like I'm just talking at you. Am I making sense?
You are making complete sense.
All right, Tim Grieve. We'll be right back with him. Stay tuned.
He's the force that drives Japanese whaling, Mark Maron.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. On the phone with us, Tim Grieve, The War Room on Salon.com. So, Tim, we're talking about North Korea, and it just seems to me what is really happening, despite whatever technology they actually have. You know, obviously Kim Jong-il is being defiant, but what it's really showing me in terms of saber-rattling on behalf of the Bush administration, in terms of Iran, North Korea, what we're really capable of militarily at this point in time, and just how many friends we have in the world, is that Bush's, you know, whatever saber-rattling he may do outside of an airstrike, which, God forbid, we don't want that to happen, is kind of empty. And this is showing just how alienated we are from a good part of the world, and that, you know, he's claiming the UN is stalling or taking too much time. It's really that we don't have any friends, isn't it?
Well, so we don't have any friends, and that we no longer have the ability to do anything on our own. If we didn't have 140,000 troops or whatever it is bogged down in Iraq, then
exactly,
you know, we might have some military options. But we don't have any friends, and we can't do it on our own. So what can we do except, hey, look, there was a terrorist attack or a threat in New York.
I mean, yeah,
that's about all we can do today.
We just were talking about that, and I think that this is a weird thing that's happening, and probably beyond coincidence and irony, is that, you know, they got those clowns in Miami, which turned out to be aspiring terrorists. They've got these guys, which, you know, from the reports I'm reading, it just seems like intercepted chats on a chat board, and it has to do with language and desire, but there was no operation in place and there was no real planning in place. Does it seem to be more to you from what you've seen other than some correspondence?
No, I haven't seen any clue that there's anything more to that. And you know, it's not just the Miami thing. It was when they first arrested Jose Padilla. Remember, he was going to be a shoe bomber and a God knows what else, and then they couldn't ever really charge him with much of anything. You remember when they had the orange alerts during the presidential campaign in 2004,
I feel the same thing is happening with this, and I was just talking about how language plays into this, and this kind of stuff is a slippery slope. If there wasn't an international element to these chats that we're having, and this was just in the States, I mean, if they can parse this kind of language into terrorist activity, I mean, that could, that's a frightening thing in a First Amendment way and in a spying way, isn't it?
Well, sure it is, and it's a frightening thing in a political way too, because it shows that they can have a very, very, very thin reed of a whisper of a thread and turn it into the kind of thing that's going to win the day's news cycle. So you know, the next time the Democrats are making points on whatever, you know, watch the breaking news alert in your email for news of a new terrorist.
And the frightening thing is how the media plays along with it, because I noticed that with the Miami guys, even though they were incapable of doing anything, they lived in a warehouse and sold soap, and they wanted...
And were fooled by an FBI agent into thinking he was an Al-Qaeda member.
Yeah, exactly. And they requested uniforms and tanks. That's how terrorists work. You want to
thinking there.
Yeah, you want to get 12 guys wearing the same hat marching down the street with a Hummer. Yeah, let's move on then to Joe Lieberman and that disaster. Now, if what he's doing, if he gets this petition up to enable him to run as an independent, he can avoid the primary altogether, right?
Right.
What a slime dog this guy is! Is that he is he's completely willing to not even try to salvage whatever Democratic base he has, whatever kind of Democrats he may appeal to. He's just saying, look, you know, I'm going after the Republicans, right?
No, that's exactly right. My colleague at Salon, Walter Shapiro, used the word selfish today in a piece, and I thought that was exactly the right piece, the right word to use. I mean, what other explanation is it if you're Joe Lieberman sitting around saying, you know what, I don't care what the Democrats in my state think. By God, I'm the person this state needs in the Senate.
Yeah, I just think it really portrays him to be exactly what he is, a selfish Republican.
But I did what I thought was a pretty funny thing in War Room today. I did a list of quotations from Lieberman last night at the Lamont debate, and then some from Bush with his interview with Larry King last night, and challenged the readers to see if they could guess which was which. Coase took a look at it, and he even got a couple of them wrong after having watched the debate himself.
Oh, really? That's interesting. That's very clever, man. We did a thing on this show once, or on my old show, where we had is it Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad? And we actually and we actually had sound bites, and it wasn't easy for people to pick them. Is the way that the media is complicit in these games that the neocons or the Republicans are playing around these aspiring terrorists is that, if the news is that these guys talked about, you know, blowing up the Sears Tower, the picture you're going to see in the paper and on the homepage of AOL is the Sears Tower.
That's exactly right. And I happened to notice this morning on Yahoo News, the AP photo that was running first off was not just a picture of the Holland Tunnel, but a picture of the Holland Tunnel dressed up for Christmas.
Wow.
You know,
see?
Christmas trees, everything. So it was everything coming together. It was, you know, Al-Qaeda's after us, and it was the war on Christmas all at the same time.
and that sinks into people's heads, especially the programmed ones. They put all that together.
I love it when a good plan comes together.
That's right. So let's talk quickly about the information that that Bush actually okayed the Wilson slander hit.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
What is it exactly that I mean? It seems to me between Jason Leopold and between, you know, other information sources that this keeps getting more and more convoluted, and ultimately all we're going to see is a trial revolving around Scooter Libby, and the rest of this stuff is going to somehow dissipate.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, this story is interesting. This is Murray Watts writing from the National Journal, saying that Bush, you know, at least in some generalized way, said to Cheney, yeah, let's get this stuff out about what was really going on with Joe Wilson. You know, the dots aren't quite as fully connected as we might like them to be in terms of what Bush actually told Cheney about Wilson or his wife or anything like that. So we don't know. But you know, you're right. At the end of the day, I mean, I think there's really no no reason to believe at this point that Karl Rove is going to be indicted.
Right.
And so what we've got is this, you know, did Scooter Libby lie to the grand jury business, which is interesting, but, you know, I find it beyond hard to believe that that he won't be pardoned, you know, before or after a trial happens. So,
And also they're just going to kind of rewrite history to accommodate executive privilege, you know, both on behalf of the vice president and the president. And this has gotten, you know, so convoluted that even people that are spending their lives parsing it have lost a certain semblance of what is going on. I don't even know where Fitzgerald is with this thing at this point.
No, I think that's right. The people who are following have lost interest, and the people who aren't following it are never going to get interested. And it's not going to be the sort of thing that's going to swing that voter in Ohio who still hasn't quite made up his mind as between George Bush and whoever comes.
God, it felt like it was going to be that for a while, didn't it?
It did, but I think it's all factored in, and it's, you know, it's a complicated story. So
yeah.
People are going to throw up their hands. And,
all right, you know, Tim Grieve, I appreciate it. The War Room, Salon.com. Good work. Great talking to you.
Always a pleasure.
All right, take care, man.
Thanks.
We will be back with Greg Graffin from Bad Religion on his new solo album, a folk album of all things, which I think has actually some traditional folk songs on it, if I'm not mistaken. Stay with us.
He exploded from the head of Zeus, Mark Maron.
Thank you. That sound you hear you're going to be amazed at who that is. As lead singer and guitarist for the seminal L.A. punk band Bad Religion, Greg Graffin took punk lyrics up a notch as far as taking down political targets, and Greg Graffin is still doing that today. Bad Religion has a studio album out. It came out, I think, a year ago, Empire Strikes First. And Graffin has a new solo album out, which you're listening to now. The Bad Religion album is a Bad Religion album, but this album, the Greg Graffin album, is I believe it is a folk album, my friends. It should be known that Graffin has a master's degree in geology from UCLA and received his PhD in evolutionary paleontology from Cornell University. Welcome to the show, Greg Graffin.
Well, thank you very much. Quite an introduction there.
Well, you know, I do a lot of work on the intros.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I think it's interesting to me, as somebody who has a career in rock and roll, and now you're sort of shifting your focus a little bit, which we'll get into in a minute, but academics, that when I read your bio or some information on you, that you got into the punk rock scene at like 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me, I mean, that was academics the plan B, and then you decided to go ahead and stick with plan A after you got all the academic stuff in the bag?
Well, at the age of 15, I already knew that if I was going to be in a band, I didn't want to follow any stereotypes. And let's face it, the rock and roll singer stereotype is pretty dismal.
Right.
I mean,
exactly. Absolutely.
So I just wanted to make sure that if I was going to be in a band, it was going to be a band that kind of provoked people to think. And as I got older, I realized that one way to do that is to stay sharp in academia.
Well, that's amazing. So you actually you went and got a doctorate or a PhD just to keep your punk chops up.
Yeah, it could be. You could see it that way. But I also had a lot of family pressure. Now, of course, my parents might be listening, so I better be careful. But
oh, that's funny. So
they didn't actually force me to stay in school. But let's just say there was a powerful template there when I was growing up, because my dad's a professor and my mom was an academic. And so, let's just say it ran in the family.
That's called the guilt incentive. it's subliminal.
Yep.
Well, so initially, but didn't they at least acknowledge that you helped redefine rock music or music in general or popular music in that
way?
Well,
that's very kind of you. I appreciate that. I'll take the credit if you give it to me. But honestly, my parents, first of all, were always very supportive, and they would always come to shows, and they still do come to shows. So they are definitely very proud of what I've accomplished in Bad Religion. As for redefining anything, I'm not sure that we can take that claim. I mean, we cite all of the early LA punk bands as our influences, and there were many pioneers who came before us. So
you were part of a wave then. How about that?
Definitely.
All right, and I imagine that your parents are much more comfortable with the music you're playing now.
This new album, they like it a lot, but mostly because it kind of sprung from family roots. I mean, these old-time songs that are on this album, Cold as the Clay, they came from a place that is unfamiliar to most of our punk fans because it was really private. It was my family that first introduced me to these when I was even younger than 15. Ever since I can remember, my uncle would pull out his banjo and guitar and start playing these tunes at family gatherings. So
isn't that interesting how things turn around, Greg Graffin? We're probably when you were like 14, you're like, oh, here comes the banjo again. And now, as an older person, you're like, maybe I should reinvestigate some of that banjo music.
Yeah, that's pretty true. Although I must say, I learned how to sing this kind of music. You know, I started, the first songs I ever heard were these folk songs, so I kind of brought that style to Bad Religion.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you read some of the very earliest reviews of Bad Religion, people always talked about, even at the age of 15, how my voice sort of sounded folky.
And you had harmonies, too, which I don't think was a common thread in punk.
No, that's right. But I think, you know, as I said, we weren't the pioneers of that, but we certainly used it a lot in our early music.
Well, I think you're making a good choice. Well, because I think one of the pioneers was probably X, right? X,
sure.
Yeah, and in terms of using harmonies like that. And I saw, I tell you, it's hard to age well in rock and roll. And I watched the Graham Parsons tribute, and I saw John Doe and Keith Richards, and you know they both are. Well, Keith isn't, but John Doe looks pretty good. But you know, at some point you've got to switch your tone. You know,
yep, that's right.
But I listened to Empire Strikes First, and it still has all the vitality you guys used to bring to it, and all the political assault. Now let me just ask you, in terms of Bad Religion, in terms of your feelings about religion, I imagine right now more so than even the 80s, the threat of theocracy and just how powerful Christians have become has got to like really stick in your craw.
Well, it certainly makes me glad that at the young age of 15, we, you know, everyone, when you're in a band, you figure, like, let's think of a title for the band. Let's think of a name that'll really piss off our parents. And we're just really happy that at this stage of the game, the title we chose, Bad Religion, has become even more relevant now that it's been 24 years since we came up with it. So it's one of those things that I think will be a perpetual topic of conversation, and that is the intersection between religion and politics, and it's given us a wealth of potential for great songwriting.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, what's amazing to me is just how many people don't really think about it. I mean, I do comedy at times, and I'll get on stage, and I did a joke about seeing the Da Vinci Code, and I said, you know, what it really made me realize about myself is I really don't care about Jesus. And how is that not funny? Now, but the truth of the matter is, just hearing those words in public, literally, I've had audiences, I felt the vacuum. I felt a suction happen because they don't even hear that stuff in the public discourse, and it should be always in the public discourse that, you know, these are myths that you people choose to believe in to protect yourself from fear.
Sure.
And I imagine, like, I'm psychoanalyzing you, which is bad, but I'm looking at is this why you studied evolution, just to fortify the scientific nature of why we're here?
Well, possibly. That's a good, that's one explanation, I'd say, but, I mean, as I look back on my life, I think it's also because I never had religion. My parents were kind enough to raise me outside of the fold of church. I never got those myths and those stories, and so I sort of had to discover them for myself. And the way I found it was by learning science. The world started to make more sense to me when I started studying evolution.
Now, do you find yourself being, actively, angry at the neocon death cult, at the Bush administration? Do you? I don't know how old you are, but you're probably about as old as I am. What are you, in your early 40s?
I'm 41.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you find that you've let go of some of your anger as you get older, or that it's still relatively intact?
Well, anger, I would say, stems from ignorance. So, as I've learned more, I have become less angry indeed, but bewilderment goes up as you become more educated, and I can't understand. I'm bewildered by the platform that the neocon movement takes, and if anything, it's just makes me want to write more bad religion songs, because those songs have the fire and the energy to really provoke people. And it's given my academic background, it's only helped me to write better songs.
That's weird, because I feel like that I'm kind of I will go along with you that anger comes from ignorance. I'm trying to run that through my own mental mill. I know that anger can come from fear, but I don't know that I feel necessarily ignorant. Let me ask you a question. Can bewilderment be hostile?
Sure, you can be whatever you want to make it, but I mean, the what I was trying to say about anger and ignorance is understanding where the idiots come from has made me a lot more forgiving.
Okay.
Our American system of education is so pathetic, and I'm a product of Los Angeles Unified School District, so I think a lot of people who listen to your show might understand, might agree with that education has become so pathetic that I understand why America breeds idiots.
Right, so you're saying that you got to pick your targets, and maybe as opposed to just being angry, take action and try to change things.
Yes, exactly.
And the new record is not really a political record, so it's more of a heartfelt tribute to what turns out to be the music of your youth.
It turns out that way, but it also has an undercurrent of rebellion in it, in the sense that the title of the album is Cold as the Clay. And these are snapshots of American history, and I've also, the songs that I've written on there are snapshots, kind of timeless snapshots of America, and it's really a tribute to the average American who these days feels as bewildered and cold as the clay when it comes to their political system as any.
Well, thanks for joining us, Greg Graffin. It was great talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thank
you. All right, man. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was a nice chat. Really. What a nice guy. Smart guy. And that is a sign of maturity, to be forgiving, certainly along those lines, and assess the roots of things as opposed to blame the victims. We will be back with Doug Benson shortly, and also we've got Sammy the Stem Cell in the wings.
I need to reorder some checks. Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. By the way, July 16th, folks, Greg Graffin at the Troubadour. If you want to get involved with that, it's going to be at the Paradise in Boston on July 14th. That brings back memories, man. The Paradise in Boston, dude. The Paradise, Boston, Massachusetts. Mark Maron, second place in the WBCN Comedy Riot, 1988, the beginning of my comedy career. I'm always the second place guy. Carlos Alzaraki beat me in San Francisco. A woman named Sue McGinnis. Sue McGinnis beat me in the WBCN Comedy Riot, 1988. But that was the beginning. That was the beginning, Doug Benson, who's in the room. That was the day, within weeks of winning or coming in second, the 1988 WBCN Comedy Riot, where Barry Katz took me into the basement of the apartment building that he managed, where his office/apartment was, for Boston Comedy Entertainment sat me down and said, you need a manager, and showed me a bunch of paperwork, and I said no. And I was not part. You know, we'll talk about that when you come in, because he's still part of the thing you're doing, right? The Last Comic Standing? Is Katz still involved? Kinda? He was like a nice Satan, Barry Katz. He's like the nice devil. You know, like you always felt kind of bad for him. It's definitely a sympathy for the devil thing there. But anyways, how'd I get off on this? Hey, here we go. Let's do some more show. Oh, listen to me feign happiness. Now, to help us sort out some of the latest developments and issues surrounding stem cell research, we have a very controversial guest, Sammy the Stem Cell. Welcome, Sammy.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. No. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Dee doodly dum dee doo. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Hey, Mark.
What?
You. I'm Sacred Life. I did your wife. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Dee doodly dum dee doo.
Yeah, well, wasn't that
Hi,
nice?
Hi, Mark.
Yeah,
hey, it's great to see you.
Yeah, that was very pleasant. Now, now, Sammy, if I may have a moment to quote from the Herald newspaper out of Britain, quote, a team from Edinburgh University has identified a new type of liver stem cell which has the potential to mature into different cell types and help repair.
Whoa, what? Slow down there, little soldier.
Uh-huh.
What the hell are you doing?
I'm asking you a question about stem cell research.
No, Mark. You're crying inside.
What are you talking about?
Let me tell you something, face. The Nile is not a river in Egypt.
I don't know what you're talking about, Sammy.
Hey, and this one goes out for Andy, too.
Uh-huh.
Flushing is not a city in New York.
Uh-huh.
You get my message?
Yeah.
Either get a better diet or use a different toilet. Clean up after yourself. Jesus, you're 30 years old, for Christ's sake. What the hell is... But all this doesn't matter to me anymore. You know why?
Why, Sammy?
Because it's over, Mark. I'm working for Imus now. Play track 4, Bill. What the f*** was that? What the hell you got in your mouth anyway, mulch? Take that stupid cowboy hat off, you plute-headed sauce monkey.
All right, okay. All right, I get it. I see what you're doing. I see. So you're insulting Don Imus now. All right, that's fine. I mean, you used to call me that name. I can't believe you left me for Don Imus, Sammy. I mean, why? Why?
Wake up and smell the cat urine, you curly-haired sad sack. The show's over. I gotta move on, you scale-covered nooch.
No, don't go, Sammy. I need you, man. I mean, you can't do this to me. I mean, people will think that...
What? Do that line over again, damn it.
People will think that...
What do I tell them to think?
And then what, Sammy?
Well, then it don't matter. I'll be all around in the dark. I'll be everywhere, wherever you can look. Wherever there's a fight, so hungry recovery hippies can munch on kale. I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop removing his foot from your ass, I'll be there. I'll be in the ways, guy. I'll be in the way. Guys yells, get the f*** off the stage whenever you're on the stage. I'll be in the way. Kids laugh when I cram a cabbage down your pie hole and they know supper's ready. And when I tell them your Indian name would be Losack, and how your mom made $1 million picking up quarters with her vagina, I'll be there too. You tree-hugging nard gargler.
I don't understand it, Sammy. Wait a minute. You just called me a tree-hugging nard gargler.
Yeah, and the horse you rode in on.
You're disgusting.
And you're welcome, you dog-eared hack mackerel.
I hate you. Leave.
I will when you f*** off.
You asshole.
Right back at you, asshole.
Get out.
Well, you.
I'm tired of this nonsense. Let's get Doug Benson in here. We'll be back in a second. Play the music. I'm sick of this crap. Sick of it.
Apply directly to the forehead, Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. Doug Benson is back. I've known him for a long time. Very funny.
How many of those have you had to come up with over the course of the...
I think about 500 so far.
They're still good, though.
It hasn't been 500?
They're still fresh.
You're still hitting them out of the park.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and I sometimes respond to him, sometimes not, and I think he's repeated a couple. So can we make it like 480?
Yeah, there's some best dubs. You know, I can't.
There's some good ones.
I just thought of one.
What?
Just go, chimps, here's Mark Maron.
Oh, man.
Yeah, write that down, man.
Doing that Monday.
Yeah, maybe we could write. You got any
just
other
start
ones?
Doing one word each time.
Yeah.
I did flaggy flaga flaga.
Uh huh.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Hey, Flynn.
Flugel hargle flargle
snark. Yeah. So Doug, let me just say, is the one of the creators of the Marijuana Logs. For those of you who are wondering, it's
co-creator.
It's running somewhere as we speak, right?
Yeah.
With people
always.
Always running.
Yeah.
How much you make
off
of that?
It's in Venezuela now.
Is it really?
Some dudes.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Spanish dudes?
Yeah.
So you just the script and they pay you royalties?
Yeah.
How much do you make on that, the Venezuela?
Yeah, it's not much.
Really?
It's like residuals from doing a guest role on a sitcom.
It's a franchise, though, right? It's like Togo's or something.
It's exactly like Togo's.
So yeah.
Every audience member gets a sandwich and a bag of chips.
And some pot.
They passed out chips at a show once, a Marijuana Log show, and it sounded like everyone busted into them right away. So the first 10 minutes of the show sounded like the theater was on fire.
Crinkle that on the mic, Jim. Crinkle it.
Yeah, it's a fire. Everybody get out.
So is it out in script form from the French company?
I don't know if the French people are involved, but, you know, there's licensing that can be done. If you go to potshow.com, you can track it down.
Really?
Yeah.
You act like you have nothing to do with it anymore.
I don't really. I just wait for the Jux to come in. And I perform in it from time to time. We're doing it in Joliet, Illinois on August 3rd, I think.
At the prison?
Yeah. And then Milwaukee. I mean, we're going to all the great glamorous...
Mostly college towns, or how does it
spots.
Work? What theaters that seat about 200 or something, 300, what?
Yeah, no, you know more like 1,000 seaters.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
For how long a run?
Yeah, we just do one night. We just blow in and do it.
Oh, that's
like,
great,
almost
man.
Almost like a, you know, kind of like a rock tour or something.
That's great. And you fill the place up?
Yeah, you know how stoners are. They
maybe they come.
We get there and they go, ticket sales are slow. And then there's a boom the day of, but it still doesn't sell out.
It doesn't quite
make it there.
Oh, that's amazing. It's weird to me about the whole following thing. Because now, like, what you're doing the last Comic Standing, you're done on it.
I'm finished, but it made me more famous than I've ever been.
Right.
Like, it's amazing the exposure you get from
it. And you've been doing comedy as long as I have, like 22 years?
Long time, yeah.
22, 23
not,
years?
Yeah, let's not drag specific
okay,
numbers
sorry,
into
man.
It.
Okay, sorry, man. A while. Long enough to have hoped that maybe...
Almost as long as you, old man.
Okay, old man. You're holding on. We're doing okay. I'm not gray. You're not gray. I'm not dying my hair.
I
don't know about you.
We're lucky.
Yeah.
I'm not dying it yet.
I'm going to my high school reunion tomorrow. My
no,
25th.
You're not. My Why? 20.
I've never
Why?
Been to one. 25th. Is that even a real
What are you
going to
do? Show up and strut around? I just got a radio show canceled on me.
No. Have you seen my wife?
I have.
I'm going to strut around.
I forgot
around.
About that.
Can I strut around my wife? For God's sake. Boy, when she gets
That's
dolled
enough.
Up, man, it's going to mean something.
Yeah, it's going to be sick.
Okay. So what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So you decided to do this last Comic Standing primarily because it does get you a little traction, does get you some momentum, and you feel like it has already?
I've never done stand-up in primetime television before.
Right.
Summer or otherwise. So it's an opera. You know, it's like what The Tonight Show used to be. Like, The Tonight Show used to be if you were on it, your money would go up, people would come to see you.
Right.
And that doesn't happen anymore. There's too many of those late night things and nobody gives a damn.
And also, this is more like, I don't know how you feel about like America's Talented Search, whatever the hell that new one is.
America's Got Talent.
Yeah, whatever the hell that is. As touching as it can be and in a pathetic way, I can't stand those shows. I think they ruin everything. But this show, this is professional comics. Most of you guys like have chops.
Yeah, they're real comics. Yeah. All of them are real comics except for that pregnant lady. I don't know what her deal is. She's married to some UTA guy or something.
Is it true?
I think so.
I didn't even see her. I saw the old lady. I shouldn't call her that. The older woman who does the kind of jappy Long Island shtick.
Yeah,
I've never
seen
her before, but she's.
Oh, I've seen her around over the years. Yeah, she's been at it almost as long as we have, if not longer.
Well, I assume that, but I just never met her before.
Yeah.
And that guy, Chris Roberts, is that his name?
Chris Porter.
Porter, he's pretty funny.
Yeah, he's super funny.
Yeah, he
I
killed
like
at the improv the other night.
Yeah, he's good. He's got it. And he, you know, and Gabriel Iglesias is been around for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy, yeah.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's real comics, but it's funny how it still manages to come off like they're amateurs, because when you show 90-second snippets of somebody's act on TV, it's just like, it doesn't...
How long do they get to do in entirely on there? Do they cut it?
My set on the semifinals was 3 minutes. They gave me 3 minutes, and then they cut it down to about a minute 40.
It's like Star Search.
Yeah.
That reminds me of doing contests. It's just the worst, because you get no, like, 3 minutes, that maybe at the end of 3 minutes with my act, people were just starting to say, I guess he's okay.
Yeah, you barely sat down at that point.
I probably haven't hit the stool yet. That's at about
There's
seven
no
when
time
I start
to sit down and really get into it.
I usually hit the stool when the first valley comes.
Yeah.
Like I work against it. Like if I start to tank, I'll hit the stool to make it look like it's all intentional.
Right. Folks, I got this.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm such a good stand-up, I can sit down.
I'm going to sit down and show you that I'm not falling down a pit of self right now.
Yeah.
So you guys do the whole house thing? You were living in the house, too?
I didn't make it to the house. I didn't even make it to the house. That's part of why...
That's probably a blessing.
That's exactly. That's part of why it's working for me, is because everyone's saying, why didn't that guy get in the house? So
yeah.
It's like makes me more memorable by being snubbed. Than getting in, you know.
Oh, the house thing seems like a it's like radio. Like radio's not great for stand-ups, because what happened with me is you got to cover 2-3 hours on the air, so you're going to talk about everything. When you're a stand-up, you have some mystique. People don't know who the hell you are. You're the funny guy. They're like, I wonder what that guy's like. No one ever says that about me anymore. No, right. You know, people who listen to me on radio aren't going to go to a comedy show and be like, I know that guy. You know, he's got cats and like he's got some problems with anger. And why would they? They already know me. So the house thing, I think, is a chance to fail on that level. They'll know you too well.
Yeah, it's weird though. People, the whole people are more excited. Like when I do shows now,
yeah.
I get people that seem much more interested in having their picture taken with me than listening to my comedy.
Really?
You know, like after the show's over, people that weren't even laughing that much are like, "Can I have a picture with you?" You know, because it's like they, like you're saying, they do feel like they know me now.
Right, right.
And they may not be that interested in what I've got to say, but they are interested in the fact that I'm a celebrity of sorts.
Right, and now that they take, you can take pictures on phones and everything's so easy, they can just go out and they can hold their phone up and go, "That's that dude from that show."
Yeah.
And me.
Look, there we are together.
That's a dude from
the
thing.
It's a real conversation starter, because then the other person goes, "Oh, that guy? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I think I know him.
Yeah.
What show is that? Is that
you want to go eat something?" You know, like, there's not that much to say.
You're not even that good a conversation starter. Did you talk to him?
Oh,
no,
that
man.
Guy.
Oh, come on. So now, have you gone on the road since you've done it? Have you gone to a place and done the thing?
And they yell out for the bit that I did on Last Comic
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Which one?
They say, do segues, because I did a whole thing about, like, since I only had 3 minutes, I did this piece I do about segues, where the segues are as funny or funnier than the jokes.
Oh, yeah?
So it's like, you're getting, you know, twice as much laughs for your time, you know? So it's like, I just banged it out, and so everyone's shocked that I didn't advance to the next level, but I, like you said, I think they might have been doing me a favor.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you could. Would you be allowed to smoke as much pot as you're accustomed to if you're in the house?
Well, the thing is, it was a boat this year. It was the Queen Mary.
You could just go up on top.
You can just go bum some off of the tourists. They're taking the tour. But no, they're only in the boat for like 10 days or something, and they spend most of the time in a little yellow bus going off to do, you know, little stunts and things, you know, challenges. So I think I could have gotten through 10 days without weed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depending on what island you stopped at, you know.
That's right.
Where's it? Oh, they got to play games?
Oh, no, the boat doesn't go anywhere. The Queen Mary's docked. It's just a tourist attraction.
Really?
It's been docked for like 20 years now.
Yeah.
I thought they were taking it out special for the show.
No.
It just sits there. So they're staying. And it's very.
I'm thinking about isn't there a Queen Mary 2 or 3? Aren't there ones that go? That go places?
I don't think
the Queen Mary 2? Yeah,
no.
It goes. Yeah, I think so. So they're just going to go sit on a docked boat?
Yeah.
Look at me. I refuse to embarrass myself. I was thinking about the one that still
works. Lusitania is still going, right?
Yeah, sure it is. The Titanic is on its way out.
It's like if the house that they used to use on the show suddenly had a loud horn. Because that's the only thing that's really boat-like about it, is whenever they go to the boat, they show the shot of the horn on top of the boat going... That's
wait,
it.
Do people, are there going to be other people staying on the boat, or is it just something that they open during the day and that these comics are going to be part of the attraction? They're going to be like
I guess there's, strangely, there's a little theater on the boat where they do the challenges, so the audiences come on the boat and watch them.
But they're going to be sleeping on the boat.
Yeah, but for like 10 days.
But is anyone else sleep on the boat generally? Is it a hotel situation, or is it...
They got rooms like it is, so maybe you can. Maybe that's part of it. Is Queen Mary wants to push that you can stay on it.
That's sort of stupid. What a charade this all is. What the hell happened?
Yeah,
you remember
crazy.
When we could just go fail at a club where no one showed up? What happened in those days?
I don't know.
I can still do it. Come on, man.
I just know that now I move a lot of CDs after my shows.
Do you?
Yeah.
Now, when you do the CD thing...
I mean, if the IRS is listening, by move CDs, I mean give them out to people.
Exactly. Yeah, when I said take out the president, I meant, you know, for dinner.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand that language. It's just how
you... A dinner that kills him.
Yeah.
A poison dinner.
A poison dinner. When you do CDs, do you... a lot of times I forget to bring mine with me, and then a lot of times I'm just... I've got some weird pride issues where I have a hard time, like, sitting and going...
It's hard hawking
hey.
Them after the show, but... Yeah. It used to be, but now they're like more anxious to buy them, so it's not as embarrassing,
right?
You know, because all I gotta do is just let them come to me.
Yeah, you just kind of stand there with a stack.
And I do a disclaimer during the show where I say, "Look, if you don't want my CD, it's totally cool. You don't have to walk by after the show staring at your shoes or pretending to get an important cell phone call. You know, hospital, I'll be right there. You know, like you can just come right up to me and say, I don't want it.
How many CDs you got out?
I just sell a marijuana log CD.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No stand-up CD?
I'm going to have something eventually, but, you know.
Yeah, don't worry.
You know, 20 years hasn't been enough time for me to put out a CD.
No, I know.
I need to get 20 more years of material under my belt.
If you get Dan Schwissel to do it from Stand Up Records, it'll only take a year. There's a year turnaround on that. I'm kidding. He did a beautiful job. He's a very meticulous guy. You should do it through him.
What's his last name again?
Schwissel. I'll give you the information in a minute. We're going to talk about my high school reunion and your high school.
Oh, okay.
In a minute. Doug Benson is here.
Chimps.
Thank you, Jim. That was great. That was written by Doug Benson.
Yeah, I wrote that.
Yeah, that's genius. Doug Benson with us, comedian, Marijuana Logs, Last Comic Standing. So wait,
oh no, like that's my that's gonna be my cross to bear now. Is people introducing me that way, you know, like,
yeah.
Well, I got thrown out pretty fast.
Yeah,
it's not really like
loser on the Last Comic Standing.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a credit.
Well, maybe you're the underdog. So, but you've done every other show that we've all done. Oh man, you remember Evening at the Improv at the old Improv down on Santa Monica?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God!
I think I did it like 8 times.
Yeah, because you lived here, so you were the guy like, hey, so and so can't make it from Kansas. Will you come down and do this?
Yeah.
Yeah, those shows were weird.
I'd be like, who's the guest host? They'd be like, Jack Hay. I'd be like, ooh, I love it.
My guest host was Nancy Wilson, the jazz singer, and the mother from the Wonder Years.
Oh, my God.
Both of whom screwed up my name.
Of course.
Yeah.
Marcy Maroon.
Marcy Maroon. That's right. That's what it says when they spell check my name on my email. All right, so wait. Now, there's a way that you can get back on Last Comic Standing. Is that what you're telling me?
There's a way that they're having a last online comic standing competition where two people that have been thrown out can come back on the final episode and do a head-to-head competition to decide who's funnier between those two.
So there's like this secondary competition to milk more money and attention out of it?
And to probably get a lot of hits on the website, you know, because NBC.com has a bunch of ads for their shows and stuff.
Right. Is there something Mark Maron show listeners in the last throes of this, you know, very powerful and you know, soon to be extinct cult radio favorite? Is there something they can do for you? I have a very active blog community of about 10 people that represent about hundreds of people. They can do the work of hundreds.
Yeah, if those people want to go to NBC.com and then click on Last Comic Standing and then click on, you'll see my face and there's a thing that says online voting and you click there and then you pick me.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to put in your name and email address, I think. And if you have multiple email addresses, you can use them all.
Okay, so if you can help Doug Benson out, because it's going to help him on the road, and it's going to get him more FaceTime with fans on cell phones.
That's right.
Exactly. So now, here, can we just discuss me for a minute?
I
try not to make it about me, but sure. I do it.
I love it. That's why I drove out here.
Yeah, I figured. I got to go to my 25th high school reunion tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, have you been to any of your high school reunions, Jim?
No, I have not.
What has been your apprehension?
Well, all my friends were in the class before me.
Yeah, most of your peers aren't really in your same grade.
Yeah,
a lot of my friends were the grade after mine, but there was also a few people that I knew. I mean, I knew a lot of people. A few of the women I dated, or girls at that time, were in my grade. And a few of my buddies were in my grade. I have no idea what to expect. I know there's going to be over 100 people there. I know there's going to be it's going to be at a casino in Albuquerque.
Are you going to dress in a neon blue tux, maybe?
I'm going to dress in the same tux I wore at homecoming. That's what I'm going to do. It's a light blue tux.
Holy crap, you owe a lot on that rental.
Yeah, I know. I should have brought it back. I think I own it now. I'm not clear, though.
You wear it, you own it.
But if you were to go to your high school reunion, what would be the order of business? Is there any scores to settle? Is there women that, no, nothing?
No, it's like the hottest cheerleader, I think, was like in the year after me. And, there's no action in my grade. You know, two of my friends from my year are deceased.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My best friend.
Because I was in drama, so.
So they what?
So they succumbed to that thing. What's that thing called? AIDS.
Consumption. Oh, AIDS.
Yeah. So, you know how you like all the guys in drama, like there's maybe an occasional straight one like me, but it's mostly gay dudes
that may not know they're gay yet.
Exactly. They're total pusshounds, if I can use the expression.
Sure. Yeah.
In high school, they're like blocking the straight dudes left and right. Yeah, and then it turns out they're gay. They just really like having lots and lots of sex.
With the men, women, doesn't matter.
Whatever.
I am curious about this girl, Amy, who gave me, who was the first girl to go down on me with her mouth.
That I'm sure your wife is going to be interested about her, too. I'm
sure Amy's going to be really happy hearing that, too.
No one listens to this show, except for the five people on the blog and some people. But do you remember the first time that happened to you? And what an amazing thing it was? You don't remember that?
Mm-mm.
You?
My first what?
The first time you were fellated.
Yeah, I recall that. That's an important thing.
It is an important thing, right?
Yeah.
Were you going out with the girl, or did you pay for it? How'd it work?
No, we went out. And we had went to a dance, and then we saw a movie.
Yeah.
And then we came home and watched some bad TV around 2 a.m.
And then you're making out.
Yeah.
And then she just does it, and you're like, what the hell's going on? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she says, hey,
uh-huh,
what's your problem? And I say, what, did you want to watch TV? And she says, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of spiraled from there into
into that?
Yeah.
Did everything work out?
It worked. Yeah, it worked out fine, but, you know, she was kind of, okay, this is very personal here.
Uh-huh.
What about Doug's first BJ?
I
think that's why I don't remember, is because I went straight to lovemaking.
You did?
Yeah.
The first time
prom night. Prom was the first time.
Really?
It was premeditated. I got a hotel room and some condoms.
Yeah.
And
how'd it go?
It was good.
It was?
Yeah. Hotel room.
Yeah, it was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, motel.
I didn't get laid until after high school. I always resented the guys that were getting laid in high school.
No, I barely made the cutoff. Like,
really?
I graduated like a few weeks later.
Didn't you have friends who were getting laid all the time? And you're like, what the hell is the secret? What's the code?
No.
No? Not really?
No, all my friends were pretty nerdy.
I remember a lot of almost getting laid in high school where, you know, it just got messy and it was, you know, a lot of, you know, backseat grinding around and like, oops, that time to go. Oh, I spilled something. You know, I had that kind
of
thing.
Yeah,
but
a lot of that nonsense.
Yeah. It, ridiculous, right? How about you, Jim? Any of that nonsense?
That nonsense?
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend.
Dry-balling in the back seat. Did you get laid?
Dry-balling. We didn't call it. You know, we had more romance than that in our age.
In your age?
Yeah. You know, you're much younger than I am.
Really? Did you say, can I remove your petticoat? What the hell are you talking about? I'm like three years.
You know, we had some talking and romance. Uh-huh. We didn't, you know, your generation and Doug's are just so, they're very clinical uh-huh. when it comes to sex.
Yeah.
It's very clinical and cold. You know, there's no humanity or emotion in it anymore.
Well, did you get laid in high school or not?
Yeah.
What? How old were you?
I had a girlfriend.
I don't care. How old were you?
I was 16. Yeah, 16.
That's pretty good.
And a half.
That's real good.
Yeah, I think the first time I did it was 18, my first year of college. But the first time I did it successfully was, you know, like, you know, where I felt confident about
it. You got the job done.
Yeah, where it was like, oh man, you know what did it for me? Is this okay if we talk about this?
Yeah.
I seem to be the only one that's really sharing.
Sure.
But
I got a good one for you after you're done.
I went out with a woman who was incapable of having an orgasm when I was about 19 in college, but she was very demanding. So despite the fact that she couldn't seem to do that properly, she expected you do the work, for as long as it takes. And if it weren't for her, I would not have known how to have sex properly. I had to, literally, she would get angry and, like, you know, that's it? And, like, you know, beat me up if I didn't, you know, stay in the saddle for as long as it took for her to feel like at least I put in the effort.
Right.
And it changed my life.
That's nice.
Who taught you how to do it? You've had some hot girlfriends. I've known you long enough to have seen a series of those.
Yeah, I had some good ones. But yeah. But the first girl that I ever fooled around with, we would go to her house after school, and the parents didn't, you know, wouldn't approve of me being there.
Yeah.
And one time she gave me a handy and. Yeah. I was wearing her father's robe at the time, so that's how her parents found out that I was coming over in the afternoon, is because of this, the stain on her dad's robe.
Oh, that's great! I like the whole. There's something mythic about it. You'll wear the robe of my father as I do this to you.
Yeah, and then then to have the mother and father both saying to me, "You can't come over here anymore." It's just like. Oh my God! You have no leg to stand on. What are you going to say? But I didn't.
Oh man, I am so glad those days are. There's a great.
So that's why I got the hotel room for prom night.
Oh, it was the same girl.
Yeah.
Oh, you thought ahead. That's great. But that's what's great about a Tell's joke. You know that joke about he wishes he could go back and have sex with the girls that he had sex with in high school because now he knows how to do it.
Yeah.
I don't remember how he phrased it, but there is something to that.
But those girls still don't know how to do it.
You don't think?
Yeah, I'm not married, Mark. I'm still out there. Those 18-year-olds don't know what they're doing.
Oh man. Well, I think I'll have fun. So where are you performing? Should we plug something? Are we doing anything? What do we got?
I'm at the Melrose Improv in Los Angeles tomorrow night at the 10 o'clock show.
You are?
Mm-hmm. Just doing a set.
Doing the regular set?
Yeah.
That's cool. I was going
to... I'm headlining there a few weeks from now, 2 weeks.
I was going to headline over there, but I'm going to go middle for CK in Irvine to get this half-hour set together for the Comedy Central Presents thing.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah, and you're going to... you're not doing your interrupted show?
It's the last Thursday of every month at 9:30 at UCB Theater in Los Angeles.
Okay. And Marijuana Logs is not for a while. That's in Illinois. And
there's a book and a CD out that you can get at Amazon.
And if you go to the Melrose Improv, Doug's very open to having his picture taken on your phone with you.
Mm-hmm. And well, the great thing is when somebody, can we take a picture? Sure. And then they can't figure out how to work this thing.
Just hang out. Wait.
You have to pose for forever.
Yeah, like an idiot.
Or they look at it after and they go, why'd you make that face? Because I always make a face like I'm shocked that I'm standing in a photo with the person. Because why just stand there smiling? Like, why give them that shot, you know? Right. It's better to, like, when they show it to somebody, they'd be like, well, he looks really stunned to be involved.
You
must have snuck up on him.
You're in my top eight on my MySpace. I just leave you there because I think you're funny.
It's too hard to change them, too.
I don't even know how to do my MySpace.
That's what I'm saying.
Is that helping you out?
It's great, yeah.
It is?
It's really good, yeah.
What you mean just send out announcements?
Yeah, you can go, you know, like I'll post a bulletin saying I'm going to be at this club, and then all the people that live there will, you know, theoretically see it, you know.
How many friends you got? Like 12,000?
About 8,000.
Wow. I got to figure out what the hell is wrong with mine. I can't seem to email out of my account. Something went wrong.
That's messed up.
I know. All right, here we go. We're going to come back. We'll close out the week. I tried to get some interesting things going here, but apparently I'm the only one who gets messy. We'll be back in a minute.
Depression, obesity.
No, you just do one.
They're linked.
Oh, of course. All right, thank you, Jim. I feel bad. Doug Benson was here. I didn't say goodbye to him appropriately, and now he's gone.
Mark?
What?
I'm right here.
Oh, dude, you're still here.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. Oh, damn. That was funny. I thought you left.
I'm that unassuming.
Oh, man.
It seems like I'm not even here.
You know what, man? You've always been funny. I already told that thing about my hand thing the last time you were here. My hand! Whenever I'll never forget that, and you've forgotten it.
I do sort of recall that, mostly because you tell me about it all the time.
Every time that I see you.
That keeps it alive in my memory. I wish every funny thing I ever did, people would like
just come up and say that.
Remind me all the time.
Do you remember that house in the valley where you guys were riding the bike into the pool?
Mm-hmm.
What, were you living there?
We were jackass before it was cool.
Yeah, it was like crazy. It was Rath and Poussin and who else? Ackerman lived there? Did you live there or did you just hang out there?
No, we were just there a lot.
It's just like everyone was riding their bike off the diving board and it was crazy.
It was fun, but in retrospect, I probably should have been working harder on my career. But
oh, crap.
What are you going to do?
I feel that sometimes. I do. But don't you find that that part of our career, that part of the joy of being a comic is just being able to not do nothing and like sit there and just like think and wander around and say, this is what I fought for. This is freedom. And then all of a sudden, everybody you know is making millions of dollars. And you're like, what the hell? I'm still thinking here at the mall.
Yeah. It's still better than working for a living.
No kidding. Can you imagine that? This has been a hell of a job, though. You've written on shows, haven't you?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's that's the thing is like even though stand up, I'm tired of the travel. I don't like flying all over the place. Every week I got to go somewhere. But once I'm in a place, I'm so happy to just
hang out,
kick it during the day, tell jokes at night.
Yeah.
Think of more jokes and do it again. You know, it's like
it's great. It's great. It's great. And I got to get back out there, man. Got to get back out on the road next week, folks. Did I spill? Next week we are going to be at Democracy Fest. That's the weekend of July 14th and 15th. It's going to be down at the San Diego State University campus. It's going to be. What happened?
He spilled your coffee again.
Yeah, second time. That's pretty good.
I spilled the thing. But we're not stopping the show, man. I'm going to keep it going, even though I got tea. It's not coffee. It's tea. Oh. So we're going to be down there. Al Franken's going to be doing his show live in the morning. We're going to be doing this show, our last show, that night, Friday the 14th, from Democracy Fest at San Diego State University.
We taking the shuttle down? How are we getting down there?
Well, I don't know. We can all go in my car.
Trailer?
What are you talking about? We're taking the Mark Maron Show bus, man.
The bus?
Yeah, it's a Markgasm. It's going to be me and you and Bill Kolar and Andy and Charlie's going to be there. We're going to be on the bus.
I'm going to take the train.
We're going to be doing all the fun things that people do on the bus, man. We're going to pee in jars and we're going to look at porn and you know, like Dane Cook and the Tourgasm, man.
Crap in a trash can and
shove
it in somebody's face.
Is it? You know why that thing is so tedious and stupid? Is because none of them drink. They're not even doing a rock and roll thing. They're like, the fact is like none of them do drugs or drink. So all they're doing is like, they're doing like 12-year-old stuff. They're literally, they're just sort of like, guess what, man? I peed in your Coke.
I've never seen so much hugging in stand-up comedy. They always hug after everything that happens. It's like, you got to be kidding me. I've rarely hug another comedian unless he's black.
Yeah, right. And then it's
black
just,
guys love to do that, but it's always just a quick pound and then you're back.
Yeah, it's just part of the handshake.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're shaking a hand, and then it's like, hey, we're touching, and this is okay. This is good. Thank you, Tina. Tina, you're you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey,
she came in with paper towels and cleaned everything up. Like I feel like I don't know. I feel like a child, but I appreciate it. Thanks for coming in. You're taking the tea bag too.
Yeah.
Like and now, you're supposed to say, and now you can't drink in here anymore.
You can't drink in here anymore.
Okay, that was perfect.
And change his bedpan.
Oh, wait a minute. Do I have that too? Man, I got real problems. So okay, so we did the Democracy Fest thing. It seems like we're at the end of the show. I don't know about that last 20 minutes. Do you? I think it was pretty enjoyable.
I want a transcript.
You do?
I do.
What if I see that girl, Amy, and I'm with my wife?
Well, I think you'll have a lot of splaining to do.
No, I won't. There's enough distance. I mean, hell, can she possibly be jealous about something I did 25 years ago?
No, I'm talking about Amy.
Oh, that's true.
Hey, I talked about that job you gave me 20 years ago, man. That was great.
Her and I barely dated. It was this weird thing where I knew she would do that to me, so we would go out and we'd do that. And then she started dating a guy in the marching band. How did I get passed over for a marching band guy? Huh? And I kept thinking
about
like
good in bed.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that must have been it. I think he was actually like one of the larger horn players. Like
yeah,
a bigger...
yeah, yeah. He probably tromboner all night long.
Pow! And on that note, we don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed.
Democracy Fest.
Yeah. Here's the Mark Maron Show short order news for today. A New York man was paralyzed below the waist while dodging young bulls with other revelers in the bull ring at Spain's San Fermín Festival in Pamplona. Can't we just shorten the setups? This guy was at the running of the bulls. Doctors say it's a shame the man can't use his legs, but it's clear that his brain was paralyzed before he got into the ring with the live bulls. This is stupid. All right. Anyway, hey, when reached for comment, the ghost of Ernest Hemingway said it was a clean wound. Nice. Wouldn't it be nice? Then he shot himself in the mouth. It's an abstract joke. It's not a
I get it. I understand it.
Oh, God.
Ghosts will kill themselves
again
for a laugh all the time.
Because they can. The Florida Supreme Court upheld a decision to throw out a $445 billion award of damages against some of America's top tobacco companies. It had been the biggest punitive damages award in U.S. history. Oh, my God. Look at this. The court said that it was right for the award to be thrown out because the punitive damages element of the claim had been decided before the compensatory element of the claim, which, quote, as a matter of law, violates due process because there is no way to evaluate the reasonableness of the punitive damage award, unquote, which loosely translated from legalese means, quote, nothing to see here. Go back to zoning out in front of reruns of 24. America, we're here to steal your dreams, your pensions, and your children's lives. Brought to you by the Carlyle Group, maker of the $3 gallon of gas.
Man, that sounded like one of your questions. It was like twice as long.
What are you talking about?
All right. I like the word punitive.
Yeah, NASA scientists have spotted bird droppings on the orbiting space shuttle that survived the July 4th launch. It's nice to know that after millions of dollars spent on the heat, tiles, and foam, who knew that bird crap could have saved the Discovery from disaster? I don't even know if that makes sense.
What kind of 4th of July would have that been if that sucker had exploded and everyone on it died? That would have been a bad...
It would have been like,
4th of July.
Oh. Good night, sheeple.
Let's go watch fireworks.
See you later, sheeple. What do you mean, my questions? What the hell does that mean? Have a good weekend, Jim. Seriously, Jim, what does it mean?